It's 2:06 on Talk Radio 790 KABC. You're listening to the John Phillips Show. John is away this week. He'll be back next Monday. It's Randy Wang here till 3. 800-222-KABC is the phone number. 1-800-222-5222. That's how you could call and communicate live on the radio. It's a magical thing that you can't do anywhere else. Or you can email us at johnnydontlikeshow@gmail.com. I'll be reading some of those emails later. johnnydontlikeshow@gmail.com. And if you like social media, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Randy's Recipe Box. Coming up later this hour, we will go live to Waukesha, Wisconsin. Excuse me. Talk to Mike Spaulding at WTMJ in Milwaukee about the horrific Christmas parade attack with a guy that should have been in prison, but we'll get to that later. On Friday's show, we took nothing but your reaction calls about the Kyle Rittenhouse verdict. He was acquitted of all counts in this murder trial, a trial that had so many emotions running high, mostly because the people that were so emotional about it didn't know what the trial was actually about. To talk to us about that and much, much more is Eddie Scarry, writer for The Federalist and The New York Post, and author of The Kyle Rittenhouse Trial, a case study in the media's lies about racism. Eddie Scarry, welcome to Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Hello, happy to be here.
Eddie, how did everyone in the media get this trial so wrong?
I don't know if that's the right question. I think that it's, why did the media lie?
All right, let me rephrase the question. Why did the media lie about this case?
Well, there are a couple different reasons. First and foremost is the continuing ongoing need to justify the rioting, the looting, the violence, the arson, vandalism, cities burning down that the media instigated in many cases, and at the very least excused. And why did they do that throughout 2020? They did it because they needed to create a bunch of unrest and chaos and say, look, this is because of the president. President Trump at the time. This is all his doing. And if you don't want to see this anymore, you're going to have to get rid of him. That was 100% a reason behind, and I believe the first and foremost reason behind the media and the way that they portrayed this. There are so many people I talked to. I bet many of your listeners feel the same way. So many people I talked to about this case. And honestly, for me myself, I hadn't even really followed it. I was only loosely aware of what happened that night last year. I had seen the video. I wasn't really sure what the charges were. I had to go back and look at all the footage, look at it, as much evidence as I could from that night about what happened. And so many people I talk to are just shocked to find out that there is not a single person involved who is black. There's not a single person involved who's black, but they swore that, well, it was a Black Lives Matter riot, protest, whatever, and this white kid, I'm told over and over again, this white kid shot somebody, so of course their impression is that there's a black person involved, and they're thinking, obviously, as they given the year that they've been through of hearing the coverage and not knowing exactly what happened, they're thinking, oh my God, like this white kid just got off for killing a bunch of black people. Well, that's not the case. And again, the reason why it was portrayed so inaccurately, and I believe deliberately inaccurately, I could probably prove it, is that the media still needed to justify all the rioting that they used for political purposes in 2020.
And those riots are specifically what led to the mayhem that led to those three people getting shot in a self-defense case, that once you actually saw the trial for what it was and got to see the evidence, and because the trial was broadcast, a lot of the evidence the general public got to see almost as much as the jury got to see. I mean, I like you, I wasn't really paying attention to this case up until last week, and you know, I believe so many people had their opinions formed about it without reading one actual detail of what happened here.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I honestly went into this. The only reason I actually started looking into the case, I love trials and true crime and all that stuff. I really paid attention to what happened with the Derek Chauvin trial, of course, involving George Floyd, the death of George Floyd. I'm just kind of riveted by those things, but I didn't even really think about following the Kyle Rittenhouse one until the lead up to it, the couple days before it got the jury selection and all that got started, I was watching probably MSNBC or something, and suddenly I hear, over and over again that this is about white supremacy, this is about racism, Black Lives Matter, etc. And that is always the clue for me to say, okay, I am being lied to, I'm being misled in some way, because that is always the case, just without fail, always the case. So I start looking into it. I see, okay, wait, this kid was a kid at the time, 17 years old at the time. He was being chased by somebody, shoots that person. Now he's running towards the police to turn him to go alert the police as to what happened. If this is this crazed vigilante, this crazed active shooter gunman, you're not going to walk in the direction of a wall of police officers. But that's what he was doing, because he needed to let them know what happened. As he's heading there, the mob that's gathering behind him, the mob, again, whipped up by the media, instigated the rioting, they start giving chase. And now everyone's calling, like, saying, get him, yelling other things, obscenities. He was attacked. One guy does hit him in the head. Another guy tries to kick him in the head. It looks like he made contact. Another one slams a skateboard onto his head. This kid was in every way under direct assault by a mob of people. And so he ends up shooting people in the process. And whatever you think about whether he should have been there, nobody should have been there. But whatever your thoughts are on that, this was obviously self-defense. But no, of course, the media needs to say, no, this is about Black Lives Matter, this is about race, and because we're probably going to need to use that again for political purposes.
Well, now that this went to a jury, the jury weighed the evidence, came back with a full acquittal on every single charge, and they didn't even the gun, just bringing the gun charge, that was dropped, violating the curfew was dropped, so that wasn't even weighed in the trial. A full acquittal. Has there been any mea culpas in the media in the last 3 days?
That's wishful thinking. I don't think we're going to see any of that. No, in fact, you're seeing a lot of doubling down of the same thing over and over again. The idea, again, I was reading a New York Times column where the guy began the piece describing Kyle Rittenhouse as a white man, didn't say a word about the race of the demographic details of any of the people he shot, all of which were white men. So just continuing the narrative, this had something to do with race, that this, in a lot of ways, that this was an injustice, because they count on people actually not having known the full, you know, the average person doesn't follow these things. They don't have the time. They have actual lives. Fortunately, I'm paid to actually follow this day in and day out from top to bottom. But the media itself relies on them not knowing, so they can give them this alternate series of events, again, for political reasons.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
You would think that there should be an editorial standard if you're going to write a column about this story. Either you have to mention the race of everybody involved, or you don't mention the race of anybody involved. It's a little misleading just to say that he's white and the people that he shot were Black Lives Matter protesters, which it's in doubt whether they were actual protesters to begin with. I think some people just come to riots to riot.
Oh, for sure. And I 100% agree. If you're going to give me the information about any race, about any one person, I should know all of them. You saw the same thing happen during the George Floyd saga. There was one officer who was black. One of the officers who was tasked with subduing George Floyd, he was actually black. But you never, never hear that detail. Very convenient.
Is there anything that can be done, you know, whether it's, you know, people turning off the television, unsubscribing to social media accounts? How can we move towards lowering the temperature in the room so things don't get to such an explosive level like they did last summer? Luckily, we didn't see crazy protests over this verdict like everyone in the media said we were going to see.
I don't think there's anything that can be done, really, other than what was done. I actually just wrote this today at the Federalist, is that The verdict, the acquittal of Kyle Rittenhouse should be a warning to anyone who thinks that rioting is something we're just supposed to tolerate. When you're upset about the political circumstances you're in, or things aren't going your way politically, you don't just get to go out and start lighting fires. You don't get to go out and start bashing windows and threatening people. There might be somebody there with an AR-15, it turns out, and that person has every right to be there just as much as you do. They might not be there for the same reasons as you are, but that's the warning. And if that's what has to happen for people to understand that rioting is not going to be something we have to tolerate because you're upset about an election that's upcoming and you think it might not go your way, well, you may end up at the wrong end of an AR-15.
We're speaking with Eddie Scarry, writer for the Federalist and the New York Post. You know, I noticed that a lot of politicians who were pretty loud about this case and other cases were pretty quiet over the weekend not talking about it. But some politicians couldn't help themselves, like here in California, our dear Governor Gavin Newsom, just minutes after the not guilty verdict, tweeted out on his personal account, "America today, you can break the law, carry around weapons built for a military, shoot and kill people, and get away with it. That's the message we've just sent to armed vigilantes across the nation." What does a tweet like that do to lower the temperature in the room?
No, I hope that tweet is heated. Again, I think that this is, if we're going to talk about defunding the police, and in major cities, that's exactly what they're doing. Police were effectively told crime is legal, at least for a while. So to stand down, unless you're seeing someone unless you're seeing an actual violent crime take place and there's not enough of you to cover them all. But unless you're watching that, don't worry about the businesses. Don't worry about the vandalism, the rioting, the arson. Don't worry about any of that. That's legal for right now. It's only the big stuff. But then again, there's not enough people to cover all of it. So you end up with situations like what we had. And I'm sorry, this person, Kyle Rittenhouse, he was on scene. He may not have been there for the same reasons as other people were, but he has just as much a right as anybody else did. The fact that he came out on top of it after his life being threatened. Again, I'm sorry that warning of the tweet you just read by Gavin Newsom. Yeah, that should be the message.
I would really hope we get to a point where, clearer heads can think. I remember the instant reaction, like you talked about in the beginning of your piece, as this story was emerging, how much misinformation was getting out there and people's opinions were being formed based on misleading tweets about who was there, why they were there, and who was shot, and so many other things, where we need critical thinking here. We need to take a step back and look at what's going on and not just make wild assumptions. Unless you go to CNN.com, where their top analyst piece today is, "There's nothing more frightening in America today than an angry white man."
The stuff I've seen, I can't remember her name, but she's someone who works for NBC. I guess she has like a online streaming show of some kind that's kind of comedy, kind of talk showish, but she had a whole monologue about how I need, like, consoling her audience, because you need to understand that the opinions you have about Black Lives Matter are so powerful that someone might come and gun you down because you hold them. That, again, so far removed from what anything with this trial had to do. Not a single person was Black who was killed, but one person loosely related to this whole thing, Jacob Blake, the one who was shot by police that kind of started all the rioting and the protests in Kenosha, Wisconsin, he's alive. Nobody died.
And whether it's, I don't believe it's intentional all the time, but just hearing other radio stations report about this trial, I can't tell you how many times I've heard reporters and talk show hosts say that Jacob Blake was killed by the police.
Right. Yeah. No, of course. Because that, again, is for some people, you can't blame them. That's the impression that we've been given by this wall of media coverage, CNN, MSNBC, and New York Times. It's over and over again. I think actually there was a report in NBC. It could have been an opinion piece. I don't know. But it referred to the murder of Black men and how the Kyle Rittenhouse trial kind of leaves so many Black leaders feeling like the murder of Black men is okay. Again, so when you read something like that and your brain naturally makes that connection that, okay, a Black man must have died here. No, even the very one who is so far removed from the trial, but if you were to draw a link, Jacob Blake is the one. He is alive. No one killed him.
And this is what it's like covering crime stories in the age of social media. Eddie, it seems like you've got your work cut out for you for a while.
It never ends, never ends.
You can follow Eddie on Twitter at E-Scary, S-E-A-R-R-Y, or go to eddiescary.com. Eddie Scary, thanks so much for joining us on the John Phillips Show.
Thanks a lot.
800-222-KABC is the phone number, 1-800-222-5222. And we've got some breaking news.
Now, breaking on AM 790, KABC.
Well, we were just playing for you a little bit of Gavin Newsom's press conference earlier this morning in the Bay Area, talking about the boosters, but getting asked left and right about the smash and grabs in San Francisco. Apparently, right after that press conference, Gavin Newsom has left the state. According to our buddy Alex Michelson at Fox 11, Gavin Newsom has left the state to vacation with his wife and family in Mexico. He's expected to return on November 28th. So for the next week, Gavin Newsom is not the governor. Eleni Kanellakis will be acting governor. Now I'm even more curious. Let's go back to that press conference where Gavin Newsom was asked again about the looting in San Francisco. And let's see if he has any better answer than the CHP is doing a great job.
These people need to be held to account. We need to investigate these crimes. We need to break up these crime rings. And we need to make an example out of these folks.
Boy, he is just pounding the heck out of that podium.
Because the impact they're having is in your question. They're not just stealing people's products and impacting their livelihoods. They're stealing a sense of place and confidence. And that's why you've got to get serious about it. Now, I'm not the mayor of California, but I was a mayor. And I know when things like this happen, mayors have to step up. That's not an indictment. That's not a cheap shot. Please don't run saying, you know, governor called. I didn't.
Yeah, you heard it right there, Gavin Newsom.
Now, breaking on AM 790, KABC.
When it comes to smash and grab robberies, Gavin Newsom says the mayors have to step up. Okay, he said he wasn't saying that. Sure.
I'm just saying that I hope and I was pleased, and I want to thank Mayor Breed. We were exchanging this morning back and forth text messages. She had a press conference the next day. I liked what the DA said. I mean, that's what you need. Got to be assertive. Got to be tough on this.
You mean London Breed's plan to limit the parking access at the Louis Vuitton so the getaway car can't pull up right to the store? You're on board with that one, huh?
And again, you know, we will do our part, and we've been doing our part. And I'm looking forward to working with Senator Wiener next year to substantially, I know what I'm putting in next. My budget goes into print in a couple weeks.
This is not an emergency. This rash of, smash and grab, hammer robbery, stealing from stores, they'll deal with it next year in the budget.
I already know what I'm putting in. I don't want to get ahead of myself. But there is an exponential increase of support to help cities and counties address this issue and other quality of life issues that I will be submitting to the legislature in the budget, exponentially larger than what we've done in the past, because we cannot allow this to continue, period, full stop.
There it is, period, full stop, except he kept talking.
With that, I just want to thank our two-star...
All right, enough of that. You could hear the helicopter in the background whisking him off to Mexico to spend Thanksgiving with Jennifer Siebold Newsom, and I would assume the kids... By the way, I just want to point this question out to you, and this might not be fair. It might be fair. But just think about this. Gavin Newsom last week extended California's state of emergency for 6 months. We're about to hit the winter surge. Things are getting very dangerous in the state of California right now. Again, state of emergency. It's still here, 20 months in. And the governor is going on vacation to Mexico. Yeah, it sounds like a real emergency. It's 1229 on Talk Radio 790 KABC. When we come back, we'll go to Waukesha, Wisconsin. This horrific Christmas parade attack where 5 people were killed, 40 people were injured with a jackass driving through the parade. And apparently it's not the only time that he was driving and ran somebody over, allegedly. Just to repeat the breaking news a few minutes ago, Gavin Newsom's gone. The governor of California, who last week has extended the state of emergency when it comes to COVID, has fled the state to go on vacation with his wife in Mexico. Now, we don't know if he's going to Acapulco or he's going to Cabo or he's going to Cancun. Those are the only three I can think of off the top of my head. Maybe he's going old school. Maybe he's just going to drive down to TJ. Probably not that one. See if Gavin Newsom likes to go to Zona Norte. But the governor has left the state and put the gubernatorial powers in the hands of Lieutenant Governor Eleni Konilakis. But we're in a state of emergency because of COVID. So I don't really understand how that one works here. But I hope the governor and his wife, who just took a week and a half off disappearing from the public, have a lovely vacation in Mexico. While we'll deal with the winter surge coming up, we'll play you some more of Gavin Newsom's press conference, where minutes before he fled the state was warning us about that winter surge, you know, and how you shouldn't be traveling. 800-222-KABC is the phone number. Well, yesterday, something absolutely horrific. I don't even want to call it a tragedy because it's an outrage, happened in Wisconsin. A man plowed his SUV into a Christmas parade in suburban Milwaukee in Washakaw, Wisconsin. I think that's how you say it, killing at least five people and injuring 48. To get more on the scene of what's been going on down there since yesterday, let's speak to Mike Spaulding, managing editor at News Radio 620 WTMJ in Milwaukee. Mike, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
All right, so set the scene for us. What the heck happened last night?
You know what? Everyone around Southeast Wisconsin is kind of looking around the room and asking that same exact question. This was a Christmas parade, as you mentioned, a fairly large one. Waukesha is about 25 minutes due west of downtown Milwaukee. There's about 77,000 people. It's a big, small city, if that makes sense. Everyone kind of knows one another, very stereotypically Midwest. This Christmas parade they do is a big one every year. Hundreds of people attend. There are schools that participate, local organizations, politicians obviously march in it every single year. So this is a big to-do. They shut down main streets, a bunch of businesses open, and it's like a holiday parade mixed with an open house for downtown Waukesha. So it's very much a big deal, and at about 4:30 yesterday afternoon, things took a very tragic turn when this red SUV, and I'm sure you have all seen the videos by now, sped through the parade and ended up hitting and injuring about 50 people. The official count right now is 48 injured. Five people have lost their lives. The vehicle fled. Police shot at it once it exited the area, but it drove all the way through this parade that is a few blocks long, and it includes, as I mentioned, all those community groups and schools, but also police officers. You know, the fire department participates. It's Santa's there. It's a you know, holiday parade in every single sense of the word. And then this struck, people scattered, and Waukesha was the center of the worst kind of attention, at least for one night.
What was the initial police response as soon as he started running over people?
The police were kind of in a weird spot. We asked the police chief today about what their exact response was. And from what we understand, the suspect, who has been identified as Gerald Brooks, a 39-year-old man from Milwaukee, he was involved in a domestic incident. They didn't get any more specific than that. A couple miles from where this parade was taking place. So police in Waukesha were called to that home to respond to that incident. They didn't even actually make it there because by the time they were on their way, he had already fled this residence and was heading towards the parade and had driven into at least the back of it at the time. Mr. Brooks is well known by law enforcement. He's been arrested at least 16 times by my count since 1999. He had actually posted $1,000 bail on Friday, so just a couple of days earlier, where he was being held in recklessly endangering safety for allegedly running over a woman or trying to run her over with his car in a gas station parking lot. So,
I got to stop you right there, Mike. So this guy who ran through a parade, killing five people, injuring 48, just recently posted $1,000 bond after running over somebody else.
Yes. Yeah, in another alleged domestic dispute. So that actual bond and that news and information coming out and being gathered by the media is actually prompting a kind of a mea culpa from the Milwaukee County District Attorney's Office, who made the arrest and set that bond. They said they are going to conduct an internal review, kind of passing the buck a little bit, if you would, with who is responsible for setting the bail amount and all those sorts of things. But the light has sort of been turned on the Milwaukee County District Attorney's Office over the past 24 hours. And I do want to point out, though, that this case and charges are expected to be filed tomorrow. Daryl Brooks is going to face 5 counts of first-degree intentional homicide for running over people in this parade. But it will be tried in Waukesha County, which is next door to Milwaukee. So kind of a lot of places going on here, but that's where it will be tried, and that's who will be referring these charges and everything like that. That will all be handled in Waukesha County over the coming days.
So we don't really know why he fled to Waukesha outside of apparently there was some domestic incident. He wasn't being chased, but fled and decided to, I don't know how exactly it happened, but it is so unbelievably horrific. And there is going to be a lot of people looking at the fact that, here in Los Angeles, we've got zero cash bail, but and there are problems with that. But the fact that this guy has a criminal record as long as he does endangered somebody's life.
Former Navy SEAL Sean Ryan shares real stories from real people from all walks of life on The Sean Ryan Show. Comedian John Crist.
How long have you been in Nashville? Let's see, 2018 is when I moved here. I lived in an apartment. I didn't know anything about it. I lived in L.A.
You were living in L.A.? How was that?
Yeah. Well, let's see. Good for my career. Sent me to rehab, though, so. That's pretty much the sum of it.
The Sean Ryan Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Bail jumped, battery, and the bail was $1,000, and he was free to drive 2 days later, killing people.
Yeah, no, it is frankly a mess, and reckless driving has been such an issue here in Southeast Wisconsin. We've seen a drastic uptick in vehicle thefts, reckless driving deaths over the past, I want to say maybe a half decade or so. It's really become become an issue, and then things like this happen really continues to show shine a spotlight on what's been going on.
What can you tell us about the Milwaukee County District Attorney?
John Chisholm has been in office since, I want to say, it's not right in front of me, since 2007. He won re-election in 2020, and he is not due up for re-election until 2025. Milwaukee is a very blue county surrounded by a bunch of red counties. We vote and elect our district attorneys, as I believe most states do. And Chisholm has won handedly for several years. I think he's won 3 times since he was first elected. So obviously he's not without his fault, but he is a very popular person. He's a very, I believe, well-liked law enforcement official around Southeast Wisconsin. Now, who knows after this? Who knows what things are going to come out now and how things could turn on him? But he has been reelected by healthy margins over the past decade and a half.
We're speaking with Mike Spaulding, managing editor at News Radio 620 WTMJ in Milwaukee. Mike, before you go, what can you tell us about the victims who have sadly lost their lives in this?
Yeah, so there are 5 victims, all of them between the ages of 51 and 81. I believe all were actually participating in the parade. 4 of the victims are women, and then 1 man. We don't know a ton about them. We know they were all participating in the parade. We know that the women were part of a dancing group, the Dancing Grannies, as they are called, and they were all struck from behind by this person. We've seen some, Facebook vigils and outpouring of support about these five lives that have been lost. And I expect we'll learn more. The city of Waukesha is hosting a vigil in one of the parks in downtown today, where I know a lot of people are already showing up. It starts at 5, and they're closing roads around the park and stuff like that. But it really just is a real sad, tragic loss of life, and something that certainly did not need to happen. And it will be interesting looking ahead with all these communities. I don't know how it is in California, but all these communities around us do their own holiday parade. We had one cancel earlier this morning, and then another one announced some security changes as they move forward. So this is far from over. Like I said, initial charges for the suspect are going to be filed tomorrow afternoon, though we do expect that list to grow as we learn more and police finish up their interviews.
And we'll be watching this trial once again, Wisconsin in the nation's spotlight. Mike Spaulding, managing editor at News Radio 620 WTMJ in Milwaukee. You can follow him on Twitter at Mike WTMJ, WTMJ.com. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Really appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
800-222-KABC is the phone number, 1-800-222-5222. We got to figure out what happened with this bail situation. I mean, if, you know, low bail and no bail lead to repeat offenders repeating until they do something really horrific. And it looks like if the information that's coming out about this Darryl Brooks Jr. is true, this is just another one of these preventable incidents. It doesn't make any sense at this point, but we'll find out more in the next couple of days. Meanwhile, when we come back, Gavin Newsom just fled the state to go to Mexico, but he's telling us we should stay inside because of the winter surge. How does that work? To repeat the breaking news we found out just about 20 minutes ago, the governor of California, Gavin Newsom, has fled the state to vacation in Mexico, which in any normal time would be totally fine. He can go spend Thanksgiving in Mexico with his wife, you know, go to a fancy schmancy resort, have a time of your life. But this is the same governor that extended our state of emergency for another 6 months and just this morning was warning us about the winter surge. So, which is it? Are we in a state of emergency or are things cool and you can go to Mexico for Thanksgiving? Let's go back to Gavin Newsom's press conference where just a few hours before he hopped on a plane and fled the country, turning over power to Lieutenant Governor Eleni Konilakis, he was telling us how scary this winter is going to be. Maybe that's why he's fleeing to Mexico, because California is about to be a nightmare.
I will remind all of you, if you need to be reminded, that between October and December of last year, we saw a 9-fold increase in cases over just an 8-week period. We went from an average of about 6,000 cases a day to 54,000.
That's not the whole story. In between October and December of last year, you implemented a curfew, you banned outdoor dining, you locked everything down, and then the cases shot through the roof. I wonder if there's any correlation there.
On, Christmas Eve. In fact, it was on 12/24 of last year that we reached that peak of 54,000 cases, just like that. We saw a few weeks ago some troubling signs with case rates going up, positivity rates going up, hospitalizations and ICUs going up. That said, in the last 10 or 11 days, we've seen some stability, some good signs. That is good news. In fact, today, we lay claim to having the lowest positivity rate in the United States of America, 1.9%.
Well, then why did you extend the state of emergency for 6 months?
We're seeing a decline. That's encouraging. We're starting to see a decline again.
How many people were at this event? Like five?
That's encouraging. We're starting to see a decline again in hospitalizations and ICUs. And we're seeing some stability in our case rate as well. That's because of the work that you are doing. That's because of the good work that all of you have been doing for many, many months to put a lid on this virus to get us through this winter and the prospects of a surge. So
I wonder if the resort in Mexico that Newsom and his wife are staying at, do they check for vaccine status? And will he have to wear a mask the entire time? Probably not.
To celebrate that success of sorts, but soberly and humbly, and reminding people of the importance not to let their guard down.
There's nothing more sober and humble than fleeing the state to go to a Mexican resort.
Importance of face coverings, importance of continuing promote the efficacy and promote the safety of these life-saving vaccines, to continue to get our kids, and I know that's not easy, all of our kids that go into public school, they have to receive 10 vaccinations. It's never easy. The measles, mumps, vaccine, whooping cough, they're hard, including these vaccines. There have been about 450,000 vaccines that have been administered for those 5 to 11. We have about 3.6 million people that are eligible. So we have work to do, but we are making progress in that endeavor.
We have so much important work to do, that I'm fleeing the state. Gavin Newsom is going on vacation, everybody. Just after, what, 2 weeks ago when he disappeared for 11 days? Apparently, he was working really hard during those 11 days, like when he went to that Getty wedding. So he needs a break. And it's not like we're in a state of emergency or anything. Oh, wait, we are. Real quick, let's get to a couple of your emails at johnnydontlikeshow@gmail.com. Art writes in and says, smash and garb. Yes, that smash and garb is difficult, but there might be some solutions. How about you show an ID to get into the store? Has to be a photo. Photograph the person with their ID. The gates to get in could be the rotating kind, allowing only one person in or out at a time. Oh, like at those airports. The merch after purchase is checked against the receipt and placed inside a locker inside the store that has a roll-up steel door to that locker after the rotating gate. Code must be entered to put in the rolling door. You know what? There's some great ideas there, but they're so complicated that I'm just going to give Jeff Bezos more of my money. Mark writes in, a smash and grab at Plump Jack and the French Laundry would probably get the warden's attention. He would at least ask Gascon's permission to react. That's going to do it for us today. Tomorrow, a special Throwback Tuesday, all songs about Mexico in honor of our governor who ditched us, Gavin Newsom. It's the John Phillips Show. Shapiro up next. Leo Terrell at 5. Frank Motek at 6, right here on KABC.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Kevin Millar, we're all paying rent in Ohtani's world, right?
And the Dodgers world. Game is healthy. Game is good. And, you know, I get asked a lot, is that good for baseball? Yeah, it's good for baseball. This is definitely the team to beat, because that should be your next correction, Richie, is this World Series a bust for the Dodgers and Dave Roberts?
Hell yeah. Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.